It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellen.
Coming up on episode number 131 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? A remote tribe in the Amazon was given internet access, and wouldn't you know it, they all got addicted to porn. At 6:15, it's the first of a two-segment chat with Justin Wells of Inside Texas on Longhorn football, David Pierce's future with the baseball program, and a preview of Mavs-Celtics. And in mere seconds, leagues continue handing out lifetime suspensions to guys who bet on the sport, proving that they treat gambling seriously, all while making billions from advertising legalized sports gambling. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Although this news did come down a couple of days ago, I think it is worth getting into. The Major League Baseball suspending a guy, a current player, for the first time in a century for betting on baseball games while being an active player in Major League Baseball. Some of you may be objecting right now, saying, well, wasn't Pete Rose suspended while a part of Major League Baseball? Yes, but he was just a coach. He wasn't playing at that time, but Tucupita Marcano is a guy who was considered an infielder with the San Diego Padres organization, and he is now suspended for life, banned from playing Major League Baseball ever again as a result of placing nearly 400 baseball bets that totaled more than $150,000 in October of 2022 and from last July through November with a legal sports book. As I mentioned, he did become the first active player in a century to be banned for life because of gambling, the first since New York Giants outfielder Jimmy O'Connell in 1924. I thought they were going to go with the Chicago Black Sox scandal, but that was actually a little bit earlier, apparently. It was Jimmy O'Connell, the last player in Major League Baseball to be suspended for betting on the sport. Pete Rose, of course, was given a lifetime ban in 1989. He was coaching the Reds at that time and betting on games that he was managing. And Rob Manfred said in a statement, quote, "The strict enforcement of Major League Baseball's rules and policies governing gambling conduct is a critical component of upholding our most important priority, protecting the integrity of our game for the fans. The long-standing prohibition against betting on Major League Baseball games by those in the sport has been a bedrock principle for over a century. We have been clear that the privilege of playing in baseball comes with the responsibility to refrain from engaging in certain types of behavior that are legal for other people." Glad he didn't mention that last part there, because betting is legal for a lot of other people. More than half the states in the U.S. do allow legal gambling, and it's as easy as pressing a couple of buttons on your smartphone. Now, Marcano, who was, at least until yesterday, a member of the San Diego Padres, did place 231 Major League Baseball-related bets, including 25 that MLB says included wagers on Pirates games while he was on the team's Major League roster. Saving grace for Marcano is that he didn't appear in any of those games because he was actually on the injured list following a season-ending knee injury and receiving medical treatment at PNC Park during the times that the bets were placed. The Pirates put out an official statement talking about their disappointment in Marcano's actions and being fully supportive of Major League Baseball. And there are individuals who have come out in support of Marcano too, just in terms of having met the guy and seemed like a decent dude to me. But the reality for him right now is that he is done playing professional baseball, at least here in the U.S. Perhaps he can find a career elsewhere outside of the United States, but his Major League Baseball career is over. It's commonly known that MLB Rule 21 is posted in every clubhouse in the major leagues, and it states that betting on any baseball game in which a player, umpire, league official, or team employee has no duty to perform results in a one-year suspension. Betting on a game in which the person has a duty to perform results in a lifetime ban. Duty to perform. That they're a part of things in some way, shape, or form. I guess being on the major league roster means he has a duty to perform, even if he was out for the year with an injury. I do wonder about the nuance of this, though. We're going to get into this NBA story involving Jonte Porter and him getting suspended for life, receiving that lifetime ban as a result of betting not just specifically on his own games, but betting specifically or providing information, excuse me, specific to him underperforming based on the predicted stats for a given game. That gets into a slightly different category, in my opinion, versus, I don't know, betting on your team to win. Isn't betting on your team to win and you to outperform the expectations, isn't that some sort of gray area? Is that an area that we can overlook? Or is that a step too far because it could lead to you betting the under on some of those things and not having a sort of confidence in your ability to perform? Because I see the former as perfectly acceptable morally, while the latter, yeah, that gets a little bit shady. Now, as far as the ban on Jonte Porter, the former Toronto Raptors forward, banned for life for sports gambling, some more information was released as to why he ended up getting that lifetime ban. It had to do with bets being placed on games by a guy with the name Long Phi Pham, also known as Bruce. The easier name between Long Phi Pham and Bruce, who's a 38-year-old and was actually arrested while trying to board a flight from JFK International Airport in New York to Australia on a one-way ticket. Had some cash, had some cashier's checks as well, and he was just trying to escape the country because he knew he was about to go down. He is accused of working with Jonte Porter, who is 24, to place prop bets on Jonte's performance. Federal prosecutors allege that Porter had racked up large gambling debts in the beginning of the year to co-conspirators and was encouraged to clear those debts by throwing games in order for certain bets to hit. In this case, Porter told Pham, aka Bruce, that he was going to take himself out early from the January 26th game against the Los Angeles Clippers, claiming that he was injured. Porter played just 4 minutes in the game and recorded 0 points, 3 rebounds, and 1 assist before leaving with a purported eye injury. And a co-conspirator in the case placed a parlay prop bet, cashing in on a $10,000 wager by betting the under on each of those statistical categories. Porter allegedly communicated with the group of co-conspirators through the Telegram group chat app when he notified them before the game, this time on a March 20th game against the Sacramento Kings, claiming that he was going to say he was sick to leave the game early. Pham and others allegedly agreed to share profits from their winnings with Porter before they placed several bets on his performance at a casino in Atlantic City. Porter, in that game against the Kings, does bow out due to an illness after just 3 minutes at 0 points, 3 boards, 0 assists, which netted Pham and his co-conspirators over $1 million in profits. The profits were withheld and an investigation ensued, which did find Porter guilty, essentially beholden to his gambling debts and desperate to try and find a way out of these things. So is either of these situations good? Absolutely not. Is one a little bit more forgivable than the other? The guy's not actively trying to throw a game or trying to throw his own stats? In the case of Mercado versus Porter? Yeah, I think so. And I do wish that we could come up with some sort of gray area where guys could bet on enhanced performance, thus enhancing the overall performance of the game. We're not talking about tanking here. We're talking about overachieving. But that matters very little when you're dealing with the sanctimoniousness of these professional leagues and their willingness to show they know what's right and wrong when it comes to sports betting, even if they are reaping hundreds of millions, if not billions, in advertising from legalized sports betting. All right, coming up, it is the first of a two-segment conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, talking Longhorn football, David Pierce's future with Longhorn Baseball, and a preview of the Mavs and Celtics with Game 1 of the NBA Finals starting tomorrow night. That's up next on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
It is a Wednesday, which means I have the pleasure of chatting with the great Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How are you doing today?
Hey, doing a lot better when these storms aren't coming through, crashing around my neighborhood and my town. How about yourself, Trey?
Man, I feel for you guys right now. We caught the tail end of that this morning, but it sounds like the hounds of hell were released on East Texas overnight. So hopefully everybody is safe and sound, relatively speaking, other than maybe some tree branches being down.
Yeah, just some trees and some newly dead trees and some new fencing and some chainsaws and some just all sorts of fun stuff. It's been crazy, man.
Crazy start to the summer for sure, and the summer is officially here for the Longhorn football program. Now, most of the class of 2024 were early enrollees this year, but there were still a handful of guys who were able to enroll and get going with summer conditioning and workouts as of a couple of days ago. Who are some of the newest faces on campus now for Steve Sarkisian and company?
Yeah, there's only a few guys left in this 2024 class that had to enroll, notably Santana Wilson. He's a big-time corner out of Arizona, son of former NFL All-Pro safety Adrian Wilson. Santana's really good, light on his feet, just a dynamic playmaker. You got Melvin Hills, a big D lineman out of Louisiana. He's going to help in the trenches in the defensive tackle room. You got Michael Kern. You got a punter now. You got a scholarship punter in Michael Kern down from South Florida, and then Nate Kibble, a big-time offensive lineman out of Humble, Atascocita. And so those guys joined the mix along with Silas Bolden, the transfer out of Oregon State. And Sark said this is his team, and at SEC meetings last week in Destiny said this is my team and this is what we got and we're going to work.
There is a new commitment for the class of 2025, another running back. Tashard Choice does not waste any time getting his guys committed to a given class, and that would be another kid out of the state of Louisiana. What do folks need to know about running back James Simon?
Yeah, James Simon, number 7 or 8 ranked tailback in the country. Just a big-time kid out of Calvary Baptist. You know, comes from a football family. His dad played wide receiver at Louisiana Tech. He's the offensive coordinator for Grambling State. His brother, John, just signed with Louisiana Tech. He's a year older, and he enrolled in Ruston on Monday. And so just a fantastic family. I got to hang out with him a lot in Shreveport a couple weeks ago and then got to see him again in Nashville last week for the On3 Elite Series where they got to make their announcement. Just really cool family. Just really happy for James. He picked Texas over LSU, Notre Dame, Alabama, and Texas A&M. This kid had 30-plus offers, almost 2,000 yards rushing last year en route to a state title. You know, Simon is a guy, you know, if you ask for a comparison, you know, sometimes one of the familiar names comes up is Jonathan Brooks. You know, he's kind of a vertical guy that likes to kind of go get sideways and then get straight. He is definitely a one-and-done type guy. Can catch the ball out of the backfield. Loves the idea that Texas uses multiple running backs on any given day. Simon's a nice kid. He joins Ricky Stewart Jr., the other tailback out of Chapel Hill in Tyler, Texas. And those are going to be the two running back takes for the class of 2025, and I think Choice and Sark are really happy with it.
Longhorn fans have been waiting patiently for a D-line recruit to announce his commitment. That would be Zion Williams, the talented defensive lineman out of Lufkin, one of the top-rated recruits in the class of 2025. And it looks like he finally has an announcement date, and that would be July 4th, a month from yesterday. Where are you right now with Zion Williams recruitment? Is it still a Texas and A&M bat, or is LSU a part of the equation? Ultimately, where do you sit with Zion Williams and what his future school might be as of a month from now?
Yeah, Williams is in the must-get category. 6'5", 320, just a gigantic ball of awesome. Really, really good kid out of East Texas. This is a Texas-LSU battle. He just came off his LSU official visit, and that's when he told me the other day that he had an announcement date and that he'd be ready on July 4th. I think the Tigers are going to be the team to beat down the stretch, but he still has an official visit to Texas A&M and to Texas. And so I think that the Texas one, which is his last one, June 21st to the 23rd, that's going to be the Horns' last big chance. Now, if this kid announces to the Tigers on July 4th, that's not going to stop Texas from recruiting him. They have prioritized this kid. They're going to recruit through the whistle. They're not going to stop calling and building that relationship until signing day down in December. And so, but right now, I think LSU has the edge. Bo Davis, it was early on this recruitment from his time in Austin that carried over into Baton Rouge. And so right now the Tigers have put themselves in a really good position for him. Texas needs this guy. They need a couple big hog mollies on the defensive line for the 2025 cycle. They need to kind of stock that cupboard because they're about to lose another handful of D linemen in the draft in 2025. And so Zion is very, very important. I think LSU has the edge right now. But Texas has that last shot, and he told me flat out he's going to give Texas, you know, he's going to listen to what they say before he makes it. That's why he wanted to wait for his announcement. He wants to wait for that Texas official visit to see how it goes. And so I think Sark and Kenny Baker and PK, they've got their hands full, but that's what they're good at. Sark is really good once they get in on campus for the OV, when they start discussing some of the more important things like NIL and things of that sort. And so, LSU and Texas, it's going to be one or the other. I like the Tigers right now, but don't sleep on Texas. Let's see what happens. Let's get some clarity after that last official visit.
Yeah, we want to see Kenny Baker get a W on the recruiting trail over Bo Davis, who is obviously very good in that capacity and proved as much here in Austin over the last few years. Now, speaking of big-time recruits on campus, Justin, there is a big-time recruit on campus as we speak right now, five-star wide receiver out of Tampa, Florida, Dallas Wilson, technically an Oregon commit, but he is currently visiting the facilities and speaking with Coach Sarkisian and potential future teammates here in Austin. Is this legitimate, or is this just a matter of Dallas Wilson enjoying the process?
I'd like to say it's legitimate, but I think it's Dallas Wilson enjoying the process. He's also going to see Florida. He's also going to see Miami a few times, FSU. He's enjoying himself. I think he's pretty solid to Oregon right now. Texas has been trying to get him on campus for months. And so last week, he had kind of denied that he was going to be taking the visit. But at the end of the day, he was expected on campus today. I think he's just going through the process. This recruitment isn't going to get real until he schedules an OV. And like I said, I think he's pretty solid to Oregon. But whenever you can get a five-star receiver on campus, you shoot your shot. And I think that's what Chris Jackson and Steve Sarkisian are doing right now. He's a big-time playmaker, but I think he's just enjoying the process at this stage.
Looking ahead a little bit to the 2024 football season, the SEC does not waste any time doing a good job of scheduling its games. How do I know? Well, they've already announced that Texas OU is going to be a 2:30 kickoff for the upcoming season. You and I have been to a ton of Texas OU games at 11 o'clock, at 2:30, even some at 12. 2:30 is the best of those three options, correct?
Absolutely. It's not too early. It's not too late. Listen, I don't think anybody has had the hell that it takes to get into the Fair Park before 11 a.m. But you don't even get a Fletcher's Corny Dog. You don't even get a breakfast beer or lemonade. You got to jump right into the stadium and jump right into the Red River Shootout. I like it at 2:30. I think that's when everyone's kind of warmed up, tuned up. It's a little bit better than doing it at night. A little bit warmer in the day, but it gives you more of an opportunity to get there. And you know what? It gives recruits a better chance to get there, because after Friday night games, that 11 a.m. kickoff was just so inconvenient for both programs. It's back at 2:30 where it belonged, where I've been used to it for years. And I think that's the overriding sentiment, is that they like it back in that, you know, because the SEC considers that 2:30 primetime slot.
All right, true or false? In the next 5 years, the SEC will test out a night game at Fair Park between Texas OU. Let's say a 6 o'clock kickoff in early October.
False. You can't have all those Texas OU fans drinking all day long before they get into that game. It's already rowdy. It's already incredibly intense. You put that game at night, and there's no telling what could turn out. Would it be an even better game? Probably so. But at the end of the day, I just don't see that being a night game.
What about if we boost the security, we add some extra police officers to make sure that everybody remains fairly friendly, to make sure everybody gets back to their cars safely, although I don't know how much driving you want to be happening with a 6 o'clock game. I feel like it's worth testing out at least 1 year, and when it turns into a complete disaster, well, we can go back to 2:30 or maybe even switch it to 11 for a couple of years.
It's always worth a shot just to kind of see. You know, if both teams were number one or number two in the country and they came into it, I could see that. But again, the SEC views that 2:30 slot as a very prime time spot. They want some big, big guns in that spot for their conference. And I think that's why they designated that one back for Texas OU.
No doubt about that. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Find him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments on Wednesdays. We are done with segment one. Coming up next segment, Justin and I will talk about a couple of different things, including David Pierce's future in Austin with the UT baseball team, as well as the Mavs and Celtics getting going tomorrow night in the NBA Finals. Dallas has a chance to win a second championship. They're going to have to go through a really good squad to do so. Justin's a Mavs fan and a big basketball honk as well. So we'll find out what he thinks about that matchup and who ultimately wins it all when it is all said and done. That's right here on Sports Day Plus on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Guy who can be found on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and heard on this radio show every Wednesdays for a couple of segments. This is segment two. Justin, the UT baseball team season came to an end in College Station on Sunday. Heartbreaking loss to the Aggies on Saturday night, a game that goes into extras as a result of some sloppy fielding. And then they end up just losing the handle on their game against Louisiana Raging Cajuns on Sunday. Lots of questions being asked right now about David Pierce and his future with this program. As taking this team to the World Series 3 times in his 7 years as coach, really only had one bad season. Obviously, the COVID year gets stricken from the record. But there is a lot of noise right now as to whether David Pierce should be the guy to lead this program heading into year one of SEC play, considering how good that conference is at college baseball. Do you have any personal opinions on that? And are you hearing anything behind the scenes from folks who are dialed into this Longhorn baseball program?
Well, I'm hearing that there's definitely some reason for concern with Pierce and his staff. Like you said, there's really only been one bad season. I think David Pierce has done a pretty good job in Austin. He's gone to multiple College World Series. He's won a couple Big 12 championships. He's done well, but at Texas with baseball, I mean, they're the program. There's not a more renowned program in all of college sports than Texas baseball. And I think that's a big stature, and those are big expectations. And so, you know, Pierce has had some turnover with his staff over the last few years, and some good and some not so good. And I think at the end of the day, like you said, they're going into the SEC, which is such a power conference when it comes to baseball. I wouldn't be surprised if CDC wants to go in another direction. It just all depends on who that next direction is. You know, do they go knocking on the door of Texas A&M coach Jim Schlossnagel? You know, Conte and him are really close from their days at TCU. They're still friends, and that to me is it could be a possibility. But I think CDC is going to do what he always does. He's going to be judicious through the process. He's going to vet a lot of different people. He's going to talk to only a few. He's going to keep that circle small, and then they're going to reevaluate where David Pearson and his staff are at the end of the day. Personally, I try not to get too involved when it comes to that, just because coaching changes, they just change lives. And it affects livelihoods. But I think, I think the way the staff has been handled in the last few years is less than good. I think, again, he's recruited really well. He's put together a good product. They finished the season pretty well until they went to College Station. They were, what, an inning or two away from beating the Aggies and moving on to in that winner's bracket in the regional. He's done a really good job. Again, sometimes programs need a new voice. Sometimes they need a new direction. And now that Texas is headed in the SEC, I think you're right. I think they could go in another direction simply because they want to go into that conference with their boots on the floor. And so at the end of the day, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, Trey. But I wouldn't be surprised if Del Conte and that group go in a different direction. It's all going to be determined on who they go after, and I think Schlossnagel's at the top of that list.
Moving on now to the NBA Finals. You are a Dallas Mavericks fan. They are playing for another championship starting tomorrow night, Game 1 in Boston against the Celtics. Neither the Mavs nor Celtics had any issues in their conference finals matchups against the Indiana Pacers and the Minnesota T-Wolves. Just how confident are you right now that Luka, Kyrie, and the bunch can bring title number 2 back to Big D?
It's a great question, and it's an absolute great time to be a Mavericks fan. It's been so much fun watching this group grow over the last few years. And then when they added Kyrie last year and then Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington and Derry Jones this year, everybody's kind of cut out and niched a role. And then, people were mad that they kind of tanked at the end of last year, but that assured them a lottery pick, which turned into Derek Lively, one of the best rookies in the NBA this year and one of the key members of this basketball team. Listen, outside of Kyrie, this is a young team, and they're going to grow together. And Luke has just been he's already great. He's already one of the best in the country, in the world at basketball. But now, I feel like in this playoff stretch, he's even, raised his game. Kyrie as well. Kyrie's had the best season of his career this year. And both those guys really, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, when we talked about if they can get past Minnesota. And I basically said, we need big games out of Luke and Kyrie. Like, all the role guys are doing their thing. But those are the two guys you got to rely on. In that Game 5 win against Minnesota, both guys going 30-plus points. Obviously, Luke at 20 in the first 9 minutes of the game. That's a competitor. That's a guy that lives for this moment. Boston is a more seasoned team. They've been together longer. They've been to the finals before. This is the second trip with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and I think those two are some of the best 1-2 punches in the NBA. It's going to be a good series. I think it's going to be tough. The thing is, I don't think Boston's been tested, and I do think Dallas can do that. Dallas is first team since the Kobe Lakers in the early 2000s to beat 350-win teams to a playoff series until they reach the finals. Boston hadn't, their road was a little bit easier. I felt like Dallas had to really beat some juggernauts. Don't forget, the Timberwolves were the number one defense in the NBA. They had the defensive player of the year. They had an all NBA defensive guy in Jaden McDaniels and an all world talent in Anthony Edwards, and the Horns pretty much, the Mavs pretty much, they put them down for the most part. I think it's going to be a great series. I think it'll probably go 6 or 7, just because Boston's been there and they're playing with that chip on their shoulder. But I'm not about to bet against Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving at this time. You've got two closers. Imagine being a premier baseball team and having Dennis Eckersley and Mariano Rivera. If you keep the Mavericks in the game in the fourth quarter and their revamped defense and their rotations on their shorter bench have been so clutch, you keep these guys close, you're looking at two closers at the end of every game. That might be overwhelming for Boston. And so it's going to be interesting to see. Just note it that Dallas is not good at game ones. So don't let the first game determine, you know, what you think is going to happen in the series, because they dropped the first two games in the first two playoff series this year already. But I think the West is tougher. I think it's a harder gauntlet to go through. I think the Celtics are a really good team that have played some really average groups in the playoffs so far. And so we'll see who's up to the task. It'll be new territory for most of the Mavericks. Kyrie Irving, obviously, he's been there before. He's got a ring. He knows what it takes. And then on the other side, you've got Kristaps Porzingis, where if he's healthy, I think he can be a factor for the Celtics as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. Buckle up, get your popcorn. There's no expectations for me at this point. The fact that they made the finals, I think, surpassed what we expected from this bunch. And they're going to be together at least for another few years, the core of this group. But, hey, while you're there, why not win it? And I think that's Luka's mindset. You're talking about a kid that's won titles since he's been 16, 17, 18 years old, playing in pro leagues overseas in Real Madrid. This is a kid that understands the moment. He understands what he's here to do. And the fact that he's got a sidekick in Kyrie Irving, who's one of the best ball handlers in the history of the sport, man, I cannot wait for tomorrow night. It's going to be a lot of fun, Trey.
It does feel like the Kyrie Irving storyline is benefiting the Mavericks. And that's to say, look, he's obviously a great player. You're right. Some of the best handles in the history of the league. You wonder if the Boston side is a little bit too distracted by what the Kyrie Irving era was like a few years ago. Whereas Kyrie, to his credit, has admitted the error of his ways when he was in Boston, said that was not the best version of himself, and that's not how he plans on having himself defined going forward. So for him to be able to admit that shows his ability to move past that. But there's also a motivation that's going to be there too, with the amount of crap that he and then also Luka to a lesser degree are going to be hearing from Boston fans over these first couple of games, that I do think propels the Mavs to at least one win in those first two games and ultimately a series victory too.
That is a great storyline with Kyrie. I mean, and we've talked about this, he's matured so much. He's a different version of himself than he was 7 years ago, like most of us are in life. And I think Jason Kidd is the perfect coach, and I don't think he's a perfect basketball coach. I think he's the perfect coach for these two guys, for Doncic and for Kyrie. He understands the point guard position. He gives them a lot of autonomy to learn and from each other and to lean on each other. He doesn't coach them up very hard because he knows they push themselves so much. And I think it takes a special person to get Luka and Kyrie to see each other in that light. You know, you're talking about two superstar guys, but if you get to know them, they don't have egos. If they can, when they push their egos to the side, that's when great things happen. That's when you bring hardware to cities. And I think Luka sees that. He loves Kyrie. I think Kyrie, if you listen to Kyrie, he dotes on Luka unlike any other player. And this is a guy that played with LeBron James. He played with Tatum. He played with a lot of these big name guys before. And he feels like Luka is as good as any of them. And I think that gives Luka confidence, because he has such an admiration for Kyrie and his game. It's just been such a good mix since the both of them got into the league. I mean, both of them got into Dallas together. And like I said, there's so many, the outside parts, from Lively, from Derrick Jones Jr. having a great season, PJ Washington having a role, Daniel Gafford doing his thing. I think at the end of the day, and then you're getting stuff off the bench from Josh Green and Jaden Hardy. I really like Dallas, and I like what Kyrie and Luka are doing. They got to do it four more times, and I think that's the biggest thing in that locker room right now.
He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Check him out on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Put a bit of love, bro.
Coming up, and where are we at in society? A remote Amazon tribe was given the internet, and wouldn't you know it, they all ended up addicted to porn. Plus, it's one thing to try and have fun at somebody's funeral, but goodie bags and a bouncy castle? That might be a step or two too far.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for...
Where are we at in society today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. As a matter of fact, today, we're going to have to talk about a story of somebody completely screwing up a remote civilization in the Amazon, giving them access to the internet, and them, in turn, doing what the rest of us do with access to the internet. A reclusive tribe in the Amazon finally got hooked up with the internet via Elon Musk, only to be torn apart by pornography addiction and social media, according to elders. Brazil's 2,000-member Marubo tribe has been left bitterly divided by the arrival of Starlink, a service provided by Elon Musk. And this was provided 9 months ago, and it connected the remote rainforest community along the Itui River to the web for the very first time from a 73-year-old elder with the tribe. Quote, when it arrived, everyone was happy, but now things have gotten worse. Young people have gotten lazy because of the internet. They're learning the ways of the white people. We don't need to put white people in there. We just lump everybody in that category, right? It's not just white people that are addicted to porn and completely distracted by the internet. Everybody's guilty here. Everybody outside of these remote tribes in the Amazon. The Marubo are a chaste tribe, according to this New York Post article. And they even frown on kissing in public. Well, there are extremes on both ends, aren't there, Marubo people? Frowning on kissing in public? I'm not a big fan of PDA as well, but a quick peck with your sweetheart in public? Is that that big of a deal? According to the Marubo people, it is. But Alfredo Marubo, he's not the guy that the tribe was named after. Rather, everybody in the tribe has the same last name, which is now making me wonder if there's a little bit of incest going on in this Marubo tribe. But Alfredo Marubo said he's anxious that the arrival of the service, which delivers super fast internet to far-flung corners of the planet and has been billed as a game changer by Elon Musk, could end up destroying standards of decorum. Alfredo said many young Marubo men have been sharing porn videos and group chats and has already observed a more aggressive sexual behavior in some of these young Marubo men. Quote, we're worried young people are going to want to try it. He said of all the kinky sex acts that they've suddenly been exposed to on screen, everyone is so connected that sometimes they don't even talk to their own family. Initially, the internet was heralded as a positive for this remote tribe, who were able to quickly contact authorities for help with emergencies, including potentially deadly snake bites. But now, according to the elders, the snakes are biting back. A little different sort of snake. Inoke Marubo, who is 40, said, this internet access has already saved lives. Members are also able to share educational resources with other Amazonian tribes and connect with friends and family who now live elsewhere. It's also opened up a world of possibilities for young Marubo, some of whom have been unable to conceptualize what lays beyond their immediate surroundings. One teen told a reporter embedded into the tribe, that she now dreams of traveling the world, while another said she aspires to become a dentist in Sao Paulo. However, Inoke also complained of the significant downsides. The changes to our routine are detrimental, he says. In the village, if you don't hunt, fish, and plant, you don't eat. Some young people maintain our traditions. Others just want to spend the whole afternoon on their phones. Yep, that sounds like the internet. Tribespeople became so addicted that Marubo leaders, fearing that history and culture, which is passed down orally, could be lost forever. Or they could just type it into the record with their newfound internet and the devices that come with the internet. They have now limited access to the internet for 2 hours each morning, 5 hours each evening, and all day on Sunday. 2 hours each morning, 5 hours each evening. Is that limiting all that much? How about no morning access? 2 hours each evening and you take Sunday off. That is a better point of moderation than 2 hours in the morning, 5 hours in the evening, and Sunday's off. Good Lord. Another father who was interviewed for this article in the New York Post said he's anxious about his children playing violent first-person shooter games. I'm worried that they're suddenly going to want to mimic them. Look, I'm not saying this confidently, but I would be shocked if we hear a story coming out of the Marubo tribe where there is some sort of mass blow darting incident that is taking out numerous Marubo. I don't think that's going to happen just because they're playing some video games. It takes a lot more than that. A lot more than that. Others in the tribe say that they've fallen victim to internet scams given that they lack digital literacy. Well, many youngsters are chatting with strangers on social media. Flora Dutra, a Brazilian activist who works with indigenous tribes, was instrumental in helping to connect the Marubo to the internet. She believes anxieties about the internet are inflated and asserts that most tribespeople wanted and deserved access to the World Wide Web. But some officials in Brazil have criticized the rollout to the remote communities, saying special cultures and customs could now be lost forever. This is called ethnocentrism, Dutra said of the critiques. The white man thinking they know what is best. Yeah, look, I know most of you are on the internet entirely too much, specifically to watch porn. It's not my thing. It doesn't make sense for me to say something like this. I get it. You're doubting me right now. I don't watch porn. I'm the one guy on the planet that I think does not watch porn, but I don't. Things are healthy in that regard. In actual life, and then also having a vivid imagination as well. But for the rest of you, yeah. You got to use the internet for that. And apparently, a remote tribe in the Amazon is very similar. Moving on now from indigenous tribes to funerals, cultures mourn and celebrate death differently. And we are seeing an uptick in funerals that do a better job of celebrating life rather than mourning a person's death. I went to a living funeral a few years ago with a guy, rest in peace, Chad Holt, who was still around. And it essentially turned into a roast and everybody indulging and having a good time and sharing memories with him and sharing one final laugh or one final story with the guy before he did unfortunately pass away a few months later. But the whole funeral, fun funeral or funeral, and I hate that portmanteau, but I'm going to use it here because it's used in this article, has gone a step or two too far, in my opinion. This is after it was revealed that a recent celebration of life had gotten completely out of hand. A guy named Brandon was 39 and died of complications from a stroke in mid-May. His wife, Katie, scrapped the usual funeral service and wake and instead hosted a funeral in his honor. Every time I started thinking about planning a traditional funeral, I didn't want to do it, said Young, who was 40. And that's understandable. You want to try and make it a good time, a positive experience for those involved, including their three kids. They have a 12-year-old daughter, a 10-year-old son, and an 8-year-old daughter. And of course, they were going to be traumatized by their dad's funeral one way or the other. But if you make it fun, then you can remember all the good moments and you'll still be sad about dad's passing, but maybe the fun will help counteract that. At least that was the thinking here. From the wife, quote, each time I thought about planning a traditional funeral for Brandon, I grew physically ill. I could not stand the thought of sitting in a church and crying through speeches. It would have been torture for my children, and in turn, it would have been unbearable for me. She said that the horrible memories from a traditional funeral wouldn't feel true to Brandon. So instead, the 500-guest event, which was documented and shared by a friend in a viral TikTok video with more than 3 million views, went completely the other direction. It included arts and crafts, a lot of chips and dip, and a bouncy castle. That's right, a bouncy castle for the kids. Now, Brandon's extensive art and album collection was given out as a goodie bag to guests when they left. He had a giant record collection that he loved sharing with people who appreciated music, and so we let people look through his collection to take home a piece of him with them. That's pretty cool. Young wanted to guarantee that Brandon's send-off was a party that he would have enjoyed attending rather than to be sad at. Quote, it was in his favorite place, our home, with his favorite people, his family and friends. It was so Brandon, it felt like he was there. She said that the funeral was a perfect representation of his personality and was overjoyed that her children spent the day smiling rather than crying. You know what? Good for mom here. I started out thinking that the bounce house and the gift bags were a little bit off kilter for a funeral, but good for her. Figuring out a creative way to go about things and getting the kids to smile at the end of it all, even through the sadness of losing their dad. So we end today's Where Are We At with a positive story, it turns out. And that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. That includes a multi-segment conversation with actor and comedian Brian Posehn. Until then, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.